Hey, everybody. Jeff and I just wanted to take a quick moment to wish you all a great holiday season. Stay safe and stay sane over the next few weeks. Cheers.
Welcome to the Agile Wire, where professional scrum trainers Jeff Bubbles and Jeff Molesky discuss agile topics. Now, here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Jeff Molesky.
And we are recording. Okay, so Jeff will not be kicking us off. I'm going to kick us off on this one. So Jeff and I got together after we recorded the last episode with Pavel, and it didn't end the way we wanted it to, so that we were both kind of disappointed with, probably more so on my part, just having a human motion where I wasn't hearing the things that Jeff was saying. You know, let me rephrase that. He was talking, but I was listening, but I wasn't hearing. That's what I wanted to say. So I wasn't hearing what he was saying. And so in a literal and figurative example of that was when Jeff said, I think, we can experiment with people maybe having 9 directs. I heard 19 in my head. And so I was like, wow, Jeff, that's a pretty bold statement to say you think somebody should be able to manage 4 to 5 times as many people as what is an industry standard right now. And all of a sudden I had that human moment. I threw up the defenses because I used to be a manager, and it wasn't a great experience. So anyway, that's me apologizing to Jeff and everybody else who's listening. But we really wanted to revisit this topic and really see if we could do a better job of articulating some of this stuff. So I've got some stuff that I want to talk through. Jeff has got some stuff that he wants to talk through. But I just kind of want to set the expectation of what is this episode about. So Jeff, why don't you go ahead and kick? Now you can properly kick off the.
Yeah, so thanks for that, Jeff. Refactoring happens. We're human. Just like when we code, like you have an understanding at a certain point, you do your best at that time, and then you have a different understanding in the future, and you go back and refactor that. So that's what we're doing here, instead of trying to pretend like, you know, we didn't want to refactor it and it never happened. So a couple different things I wanted to talk about. One was just some examples of companies that are doing this. I know that not every company out there has that 4.7, you know, directs to one manager. And there's some pretty big companies out there in many different industries. And I didn't have all those like at my fingertips last time we talked. So there's a few examples. There's Nucor, which is a large steel company that's doing this. WL Gore, the company that makes Gore-Tex. They have teams that self-organize into different teams. They have very few managers. Morningstar, they're a large tomato producer. Anybody in that company can go purchase anything that they want, as long as they can justify it, because there's like transparency throughout the organization. And so it doesn't matter if it's on your first day and you need to go buy, I don't know, some new equipment, or you need to invest in, you know, some new safety equipment, like just go get it and then reimburse it. And as long as you can justify why you did it, it's fine. There's no manager approval. There's nothing like that. There's Sun Hydraulics, Valve, which is an online gaming company. There's this company that's a part of GE. They have a part that makes jet engines in North Carolina. And they have what, one plant manager and 300 direct reports that work at this thing. And they've shared numbers that they're like 2 times as productive as like their sister companies within, or sister plants within GE. But GE can't replace it, or they haven't duplicated that in all their other plants. So it does take some kind of special sauce, special people, special environment, special culture that you have to create. But there are many examples out there in many different industries. I was looking back at some of the books I've read recently, and there's this book, What Matters Now, by Gary Hamel. And the last, I don't know how many pages, because it's on my Kindle. But on the Kindle, it's like 15 pages of just company names listed out that are doing stuff like this that we're talking about, where they're kind of taking a different approach to management and leadership and doing things that would be maybe considered radical or non-traditional. And so there's just a lot of companies out there, but that's definitely not the norm. So I just wanted to like... just clarify that there's, it doesn't just, if no matter what industry you're in, there's nothing stopping you from, you know, trying some of these different innovative, creative ways of managing
Yeah, and I think I think you hit on a good thing right at the end there was, in the same way that we want to be have an experimental mindset with even our product development, well, we should have an experimental mindset with how we run our organizations, how are we managing or growing our people, right? So it's not copying and pasting somebody else's method, but looking outside the box and looking at how other people are exploring these things and looking for opportunities for us to experiment with it as well. So I know Chad sometimes gives me some good feedback about, I have a tendency to sometimes be prescriptive, and I have a tendency to sometimes be very binary in my thinking, like it's either A or B. And there's a lot of room between A and B in a complex domain. So maybe if anybody else has a tendency to fall into that, just taking an opportunity and step back and thinking about, is it really A or B, or is that just what my bias is kind of leading mm-hmm. me towards?
You know, one thing I'd like to dive into with you, Jeff, is like, what does a manager actually do? You've been a manager, and I know maybe that's why you're a little defensive last time we talked about this, but like, what are some of the things you do as a manager or have done to help protect that culture that we were talking about last time?
Yeah. So I think with the company that I was at, we prided ourselves on managers in a good way. I think there was a lot of stuff that we did really, really well. And so if there's any managers / leaders listening, there's a podcast that I highly recommend. It's called the Manager Toolbox, or Manager Tools, excuse me. Two guys, they talk a lot about a lot of really great manager tactics. And they talk about what they jokingly refer to as the Trinity, but it's coaching, one-on-one feedback, and delegation. And so those were kind of the four areas that they really focus on. And that's where we really focused on as managers. And I want to dissect these a little bit with you because you had brought up a great point. Like, hey, when we're on a scrum team, where do these now kind of fall, right? If, you know, in the old way of thinking, a manager was responsible for these things, but now we're really trying to create and cultivate an environment of self-organization. And these things still exist. And we actually talked about coaching in particular a lot with Pavel in the last episode. And I think that's a great example of, you know, whether it's a manager or a leader who does that, or maybe another team member who does it, coaching is still part of helping build each other up. But then real quick, some of the other things that I did as a manager, which was my focus, was HR function that we talked about, right? Like understanding and reinforcing the rules of the organization and making sure all my direct reports understand that. I was still an individual contributor, so I was still a product owner with at least two products. The annual review. We were trying to break away from the annual review. We certainly were doing them more frequently, but we still had an annual, here's your pay raise. Like, and we were really trying to break free of that when I was leaving the organization at that time. Disciplinary action was the last big one. So when unfortunately, not everybody's a great fit or bad things happen. It was the accountability or the responsibility of the manager to step in and do that stuff. So those are kind of like my primary focuses when I was a manager. So any questions on any of that, or should we kind of jump down to those?
I was thinking, because I came up with my own list too before we started this, of like things that a manager should do. And I think there was a lot of overlap. And so one of them was manage boundaries of self-organization. And I think you covered that, right? With like hiring and firing. Well, it would be awesome if we had a team that could get to the self-managing point, but that's not the reality of most situations. But like, how can we get them into maybe even self-forming or involve them in the interview process? Or, you know, if something's not working out, how can they be a part of like giving feedback so that it can be handled from an HR standpoint? Like as a team matures, maybe they can work into owning more of that. But who holistically owns that accountability is a manager. There's some leadership in the organization that owns that. That's not generally part of the scrum team. That true ownership or accountability lies with the organization. And if they can push that off to the team, that's great. But like, if that all goes to hell or something happens, like it's going to be a leader or a manager in an organization that's going to deal with that.
Yeah, I think there's one of those good questions that we talk about in the PSM2, talking about like, okay, well, if the team or the organization has a terrible culture, who's responsible, right? Like, who gets fired, right? Like, if where does the buck stop, so to speak? And I think that's an area where it is a leader's accountability. Like, if there's a bad culture, it's because you have allowed bad culture to seep in, to propagate, and you never took the organizational authority that you have as a leader and did something with it. So I think that's a good perspective of accountability and the boundaries that you're talking about. Like, ultimately, somebody has to be able to step
in. And that goes into my next one, team performance. So we were talking about last time, like with Don, like can a product owner fire a development team member? And we kind of said, well, we'd prefer that not happen, and that but a product owner could get rid of a whole entire team, and the team should be accountable for removing people. But I think the same thing, like from a leader's perspective, like you could fire a whole team, or you could remove them, or you could remove somebody if you had to. You are ultimately accountable for that. And so I guess realizing that the cost benefit of not allowing the team to self-organize and self-form, and what might happen if you step in with too heavy of a hand, is something that a manager has to balance, right? Nothing's easy here, and context definitely matters. So I think you're right. There's another one, team performance. Like, ultimately, that's somewhere in leadership that's where that falls.
Yeah. And of all of them, I feel like that, even for managers, like, or at least speaking for me and the other managers that I knew, performance and there's team performance, which I think is the softer side, but then the harder, more frictiony side is disciplinary action. Like, when things aren't going well and somebody has to put together the development plan, the concrete steps that have to happen in order to remain employed here or a part of this team. Not only is that difficult for a manager, but I can't imagine a team that's really like, yeah, we want to do that.
No one wants to do that, right?
I mean, more power.
No one wants to do that. Or if it's an ethical issue, right? Like, if someone lied, stole, or cheated on something, that's ultimately going to be an accountability in management. The team's not going to. They might bring it, shine some light on it, but it's going to be a manager that's going to deal with that.
Yeah. Now that I'm talking about it out loud, again, I want to question, like, maybe my own bias is speaking in there. So let's pretend that you were on a team. I guess, do you agree with those statements? I mean, would you want to just say, that's a manager's responsibility, that's a leader's responsibility, or would you feel disempowered, I think is the wrong word, but I'm struggling with how to articulate the question that I'm coming up to. I think it's almost too easy to say that's a manager's job or a leader's job, because it's easier, and now the accountability is falling onto that one person versus are we supporting self-organization with that perspective, or are we?
Yeah, again, I think there's difference between self-organization and self-management, and unless you've most people are not in self-management, and even if you are, like, if all hell broke loose and like horrible unethical things were happening, but we're Wells Fargo and people are lying and creating new accounts to get the con the system, right? Who's going to be held accountable? It's somewhere in leadership where if someone goes to court and someone's going to jail, that's who's going to jail, right? It's not going to be the team member that like just didn't say something. The manager was like, well, you guys are self-organized, you'll figure it out. That's just not the reality of the situation.
Cool. I agree. I think that was a good example with Wells Fargo. So what else do you have here? Boundaries, team
composition. So I think ultimately how the teams get formed, we would love it, the teams to do self-forming, but that ownership does lie with leadership. Like, if they want to reform, they probably have to push a case of saying, we need this skill set, or we would like to really bring in this person that we frequently go to the DBA team. We would just want to add this person or this skill set onto our team. The team's going to pitch that to a manager or to a product owner. And I think a lot of times in most organizations, it's probably a manager that's going to actually make that happen, because the people report to that person and they're going to facilitate that. So I think ultimately we want teams to be involved and give input, but I don't know that they're going to be actually the one doing it all the time.
Yeah, so that's interesting. That one I actually would have really thought you wouldn't have thrown on that list. Mostly because I do feel like that one of what we were just talking about, like that is self-organization, right? That's a manager telling the team how they're going to assemble in order to solve a problem. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I get where you're going. Like it is a, I want that to be delegated to the team, but the ultimate accountability is back on management. So I had that one story that I tell in our class where there was that one director and he wanted to be the product owner and he, but he didn't show up for like two or three sprints. And finally we're like, okay, we're gonna do a frequency chart. We're going to track how many times we have to go back on decisions, like right after he sees it for the first time. And if he just would have been involved, we would have saved all this time and work from going down the wrong direction. And then we quantified it by how much the team actually was costing the organization. It was like $350,000. And he's like, yep, we'll get you a product owner for that. Because obviously I'm not putting the time in that we need and it's costing the organization more money than you know what it's worth. So I think that, though, is a manager's decision. The teams can prove it and they can put that data there. Like I kind of nudged them to like gather this data and so that they can present the facts. But they weren't going to go and hire a product owner or replace the product owner in that case, right? Like they just had to get the data and try to make it transparent and hope that people do the right thing within leadership.
What else?
So we talked about this culture and team morale. Like, you know, they're the gardeners. We talked about how, like, if all hell breaks loose, it's up to leaders to, like, remove that. And especially if it's at the leadership or elite team leader, you know, level where it's like, maybe it's that person that's a product owner. Maybe it's the person that's a scrum master. Maybe it's that person that's like the big leader on the development team, but, you know, is this hero developer that really doesn't let anybody else grow. Like that culture, I think the manager is ultimately accountable to like what's happening there. And they should be giving feedback to try to correct that. Like replacing people is like absolutely the last thing that they should be doing, a last resort. But they're accountable for giving feedback and trying to course correct when people go outside of guardrails.
Sorry, let's get through your list before.
Personal growth. So that's the coaching that we were talking about before. Creating an environment for people to thrive. So just like, even if you see like passive aggressive comments or you see people not dealing with conflict, like giving that nudge to people to be courageous and live the values, like that's something I see a leader doing. And then making sure people are aligned around the right vision, the right overall goal. And, you know, call that out when that doesn't happen, whether that's the product owner, whether that's a, you know, development team going down a technical decision because it's really cool, whether it's not, maybe it's not needed, things like that. Like that, those are things that I see a leader, you know, taking that holistic approach to what does the organization need. And that's why when I kind of go through this list, I start thinking, if you have mature teams and you have mature product owners and scrum masters, I don't know that it has to be a 1-4.7 ratio. I think it can be a little bit more than that. But if you're not there, then you probably need to start where you're at and you'll figure out like, hey, there isn't anything for me to do as a manager. Now what do I do? And maybe you go back into being an individual contributor. Maybe you go back into something else. Maybe there's other big organizational problems you can go solve. I don't know, but like maybe it's not things you were doing before. The stat that I looked up, there was a stat like they said in the US, if they would just go from that 1.47 to 1 to 10, that would equate to $3 trillion in GDP just in the US.
Wait, what are those 1.3 to 1.7?
It's one manager to 4.7 directs is like the average.
Okay.
When this stat was collected. And then, go from 1 to 10, it would be a $3 trillion increase in GDP, which is like huge. Like, you know, that's like, and all 60-70% of like what Japan's GDP is. Like, it's like, it's huge, you know?
Yeah. And this though kind of speaks back to, obviously I don't know the context for that.
They're assuming that then those other five people go back into producing value within an organization, whether that's individual contributor or something along those lines, right? So like these are very, if you're in management, very smart people that mature in their careers, they have lots of skills, you know, they could be doing other things, you know?
Yeah. Was that
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Give me feedback on what I said. I unloaded a lot there, so.
No, that's awesome. So a few of these, though, I feel like I can't remember who came up with the spine model where, but it was very similar to thinking about, but it was very similar to how we talk about agility, like almost like a mindset that has four values, that has 12 principles, that has just a boatload of tools, processes, frameworks, and all that stuff inside of it. But if I took a look at some of the things that you were outlining here, so I made the list, the boundaries, team performance, team composition, culture, personal growth, environment, and alignment. Like, I think if you, at the top of that, you'd have just boundaries inside of there. And then some of the more tactical ways that we enforce boundaries or a side effect is going to be cultures, the things that you allow or don't allow inside, which is going to affect team morale. Or the boundaries can directly affect team morale with what you allow them to take on or not. Maybe even team composition. Like, is one of the boundaries that we're allowing is teams to self-organize, teams to self-manage, et cetera. So I feel like not that we're not in alignment on any of these things, but boundaries is almost that higher level. And we've been talking about this quite a bit, and I'm glad it came up because I don't know whose diagram it is, but it's one that you and I are both familiar with it, but it's just basically an X and a Y axis. And on one axis is mastery or maturity, however you want to think about that. And the other one is autonomy. And there's this happy area going up when you're matching the level of mastery or maturity that your team or direct report has with the amount of autonomy that you're giving them. And that to me is right in line with what we've been speaking about with boundaries is too much. If you are not allowing enough autonomy to somebody with a high amount of mastery or maturity, there's going to be a natural frustration and friction point inside of there, right? So, and that's something to be aware of. And then the opposite of that is also, and this is what Pavel was talking about with that some of the chaos that he was talking about, but just allowing too much autonomy to people who aren't mature or haven't yet reached a level of mastery, then you're just going to get chaos, people moving in all these different directions, taking risks that they shouldn't be taking. You know, the good old squirrel burger story for those who have taken the PSM. But really, I feel like a lot of being a leader is simply having that in your head and understanding that the boundaries that you are setting is meeting people where they're at. And when we say meeting people with where they're at, it's their understanding of mastery or maturity in their craft and the amount of autonomy that we are giving them through the organization as a leader.
Completely agree. And your job as a manager is to give the gift of feedback and to let people know where they stand within that or where you see them and how do they take that next level to go up in that maturity curve. Or maybe they don't want to and they're okay at where they're at. And then that's another conversation to have as a manager. Maybe you're okay with that, maybe you're not, depending on your organization and where everybody else is at. But you can only have an organization or a system, I think, at a certain level based off of what your weakest link is. So if you have a really, really weak scrum master and they're like working at like a level, like beginner level, like they're like the scrum police, they just follow everything by the book. They don't, you know, like, you have to do it exactly this way, very prescriptive, and they don't understand the whys, but you have everybody else operate at the super mature level, like they're constantly going to be in conflict and like they can't just stay at that level or everybody's got to come down to their level to make that system work. And that's probably not a beneficial thing for that system.
Yeah, it's just like the bottleneck into the system. And so you even touched on the other thing inside of here. So kind of going back to those four concepts that I was talking about from the Manager Tools podcast, the coaching, one-on-one feedback, and delegation. I think the other big one in there is delegation. And really anything that even when I was a manager, like thinking about, okay, what are the things that I am doing as a manager that I could be imparting onto my team members so that they, one, if they want to grow in that route, they've got that. They're building up that skill set. So maybe one day, I think of one person in particular. She was just a rock star, and she wanted to grow to because she liked training other people. That was just part of her growth. And so it was like, well, hey, why don't you start doing the things that you're doing that you and I are working on with other people, so you can start being more of a mentor to those other people. And so that was the delegation part of, you know, getting her to start practicing these skills, so that whether or not she wanted to be a manager was irrelevant. It was, that was a skill that she wanted to grow and be able to do. I often think about, I don't know if somebody told me the story or I read it someplace, but talking about a manager who was articulating that, oh, you know, I have to be around because if I'm not there, the team's just going to fall apart, and they need me because I'm such a great manager. And it's like, no, you're a piss poor manager, because if your team really needs you for all of this stuff, you are not doing the things you should be doing as a manager. You're not building your team up. You're not delegating. They aren't growing. So I
agree, like, so much with that. Like, I think that that's huge. Like, stewardship as a leader, like, your whole entire goal should be to try to work yourself out of a job and set constraints for the teams to be working on, so they're not dependent on you. Like, you know, in the past, maybe like a level one manager is like telling people, well, work on this, then work on that, then work on this, then work on that, right? Or, oh, why is this staying out there so long? Why haven't you got that done? Do you need help? Like, they're asking those maybe more basic questions, where a really good manager or scrum master, like if we're doing scrum, might be like, oh, let's just put some whip limits across this, you know, system. And then there's the flow will happen. I won't have to say, like, start this at this time. You'll just know when to do that. Or let's do some work item age. So, like, when stuff starts getting old, we have a mechanism to ask each other questions and say, how do we get this thing from being blocked? That's what a good leader, I think, whether it's a manager or not a manager, does, is they work themselves out of a job. And they're really thinking about, like, they're not going to be there forever. So how can they create a system that's going to be better off after they leave than when they started, right? Like, I think that's just the goal, like, of any type of leader in any situation.
Even the coaching and the delegation, like, those were the two big ones. And then, so feedback, and we've talked about this, I don't think it should come from a manager. It should come from your peers. It's so much more powerful when it's coming from the person to your right and your left that you're working with on a daily basis versus, oh, this needs to come down from a manager, and that's the only person who can give feedback. I would rather it not come from a manager and the team feel like they can live these values that we always talk about and have the courage to give you professional feedback. And then one-on-ones, that was always an interesting part when I was a manager, because my role in the organization was product owner, but I never managed product owner. I wasn't a people manager for product owners. I had quality engineers. I had, you know, software developers, user experience, all these other specialties, except for, like, mine, right? But that wasn't an issue, because it was more about just setting the environment for them. Another tool that I just wanted to quickly throw out there, Google throws all of their management tool suite out on a website. It's called Rework, Re:Work. And so the one for people growth was they have a model called GROW, and it's an acronym. So the G is for goal. What do you want to do? The R is reality. What happens now? O is options. What could you do? And the W is will. What will you do? And it was just me. I always used to joke. It was my job to set the stage. It was their job to act. Figuratively and literally. So I set the stage by coming up with what their plan is, or helping them come up with what their plan is. And then I'm simply there to help hold them accountable. And for me, that was more of a coaching role. A lot of the things I like, technology wise for software development, I can't do that. I haven't touched code in probably over a decade. But I could help them hold them accountable. I could continue to nudge them on, hey, are you making time for this? Because you said it was really important. One of the most fun activities that I would do with people was I would tell each of my team members, I want you to, you know, spend half an hour, go out on the internet and find your dream job. Like, it's out there, and you probably already have an idea of it. Go find it, find the job listing for it, look at all the requirements, and I want you to bring that back here, and we're going to do a gap analysis with you. Because what at some point in time, you're going to feel ready and you're going to want to go for it. And my job as a manager from a growth perspective is to make sure that we have spent the time here setting you up for success so that you can go and get that dream job of yours. I don't care what it is, because it's likely not here because we were a small company, but that's what motivates you. And I want to make sure that I'm helping you get to what is going to motivate you moving forward. So just another good tactical thing.
I'm going to go back to something you're talking about before that I think is really key, is that I think being a manager for something you're not an expert in is a gift. I think too often organizations promote somebody because they're really good at something into being the manager of that specialty. And then it's really hard not to like tell people how to do stuff. You can't tell somebody how to do something if you don't know how to do it, right? It's just impossible. Even if you know it, like you and I would know, like, oh, we shouldn't be telling people how to do it. But if we were the managers of a bunch of, let's just say, agile coaches, it might be hard not to at times, because like you would want to say, well, this might be work better than this, or here's some options, right? And that'd be fine. Like, right, there's a difference between coaching and mentoring. But when you're not the expert of that thing, you have to like say, go to your community, and there's different types of relationships that have come about there. And I think you can learn in probably a better way from your peers than you can from a manager. And you can lead at the right level as a manager then, right? Like then you're focusing on all the things you said, where it's like the guardrails, it's the feedback, it's the delegation, it's the coaching. And you can't get into the how, it's the why and maybe the what that you're starting to think about with them. And so I think that's really important.
Yeah. And even just reinforcing it, we were talking about earlier that experimentation mindset, right? Like if I don't have a solution, it's going to be up on you to go out there and experiment. And yeah, sure. I mean, go see if there are some ideas that you can steal it. But as long as you're taking them as an experiment and not the best practices that we're just going to insert from over here into our context, I think that's great to support that.
And I think that delegation is another guardrail, right? Like every time I've had a new manager, it's always like, oh, we're starting over on where our guardrails are and where what's being delegated and what's not being delegated. And there's kind of this period of like, we need to figure each other out. And where we each think the boundaries are, and then like where they actually are. Like it's like the assumed boundaries and then like the realized boundaries once we actually get to the
the explicit ones.
And so and you know me, like I like to push the boundaries, so like I'm always finding them.
That you do. in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way.
So one of the last things that I wanted to touch on here, you had mentioned a number of places at the beginning that were really experimenting with that number of direct reports to managers. And again, to be clear, I think that's great. Like let's experiment and find that right number for us. Lots of people know of psychological safety, right? Like over the past year or two, it's really become almost a buzzword because of the research that Google had done. And whenever the manager topic comes up, I like throwing this out because this is the other one of the many probably little known studies that Google did. But it's an interesting quick read. Project Oxygen was the experiment that they ran. And it was, I think, back in 2008, they took a section and they said, you know what, we're Google. We're better than this. We don't need managers. So let's get rid of all of our managers. And it was just a dumpster fire. They did a whole report on just the lessons learned from it and really reinforcing how powerful a good manager is and some of the things they do. And I don't have the list, right? Or actually, I just pull it up here now. I'm going to quick read through it because it's almost laughable, the things that they came up with. But and we've kind of touched on a few of them here. But so what they found, these 10 behaviors and what the best managers that they had and the things that they continue to coach their managers on is: one, is a good coach; two, empowers the team and does not micromanage; three, and creates an inclusive team environment showing concern for success and well-being; four, is productive and results-oriented; five, is a good communicator, listens and shares information; six, supports career development and discusses performance; seven, has a clear vision strategy for the team; eight, has key technical skills to help advise the team; nine, collaborate across Google; and 10, is a strong decision maker. And it's almost laughable. Like, yeah, those all seem like seemed like a really good thing. I think we touched on a lot of them there. The one that really just made me think about something that I wanted to add to this was three, creates an inclusive team environment showing concern for success and well-being. I had in my notes here of people that I found inspiring, you know, just take out that word agile and just say, hey, who are the people in your life that you thought were good leaders? And one of the things that I would harp on my soldiers about when I was in the military was just give a damn, okay? It's amazing the amount of people who just don't give a damn about the work that they're doing and the people they're doing it with. And if you can just do that, like if you just care, honestly, and just completely care, you'll set yourself apart from 75% of the people that are out there just right off the bat by doing nothing but giving a damn. Now do all of these other things on top of it, and that's how you're going to excel, not just as a leader, but just as a great team member as well.
Yeah, I like that. I also think that, you know, people really want to bring their whole self to work, and a manager or a leader that gets to know their people and know, you know, what's going on in their life and then like customize an environment for them or be understanding towards their sympathy or towards their current situation and have empathy for them is really valuable too. I think that that just, that makes a huge difference as a manager. And I know, Patrick Lencioni had that three signs of a miserable job, and one of them was anonymity. Like you're just a number, you're a cog in a machine. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, like that's one of the things, right? So I think that's a huge thing for a manager too. Like sometimes I think people, I've gotten this feedback actually from directs. They're like, all my manager does is talk about personal life with me. Like I got this new manager, and they're like just asking me about like my family and what they do. And it's weird. Like, aren't we going to get to business at some point? And I'm like, well, you know, here's what they're really trying to do. And I try to explain like the strategy, but I'm like, oh, I guess that does make sense. And I guess if they did care about me as a person, I probably wouldn't like that either. So like, you know, I think people get it, but maybe people aren't, they don't think about that maybe like in the moment when their manager's asking them all these personal questions, like, and why they're doing that, you know?
Yeah, you just made me remember, in fact, one of the lines once again from that Manager Tools podcast is they're pretty explicit. They said something to the effect of, if you're a manager and you don't know the names of your direct report spouse and kids, you're failing as a manager. Like you still have to care. You still have to build a personal relationship with these people, exactly to what you were just talking about. Like they're not cogs in a system. They're people.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, so that was kind of like, when I was starting to think about things to do as a manager, right? Like you want to align people around a purpose. You want them to master stuff and help them to feel that internal focus, that internal motivation for mastery. You want them to know what success looks like and help them figure out how they're moving towards that. We've talked about that in previous podcasts with our leading and lagging indicators and that, you know, player scoreboard. I think the whole, like, they want to be known and want to bring their whole self to work. I think once you get to that point, autonomy comes into it. They want freedom in how they're doing that thing that they've mastered. Mm-hmm. And then I think that each person wants to be treated differently. We've talked about that with Brandon, where, you know, we have a conversation. What do you want? Do you want more money? Do you want to leave at 3 o'clock? Like, you want to work less hours, more hours? Like, what is it that you want out of this job? You know, is it a bonus? Like, let's talk about it. Let's talk about how you get there. What would make you happy? And I think that's another thing that a manager does. So like, that seems like a lot, and it might seem kind of fluffy, but once you get a system or an environment in place where people are feel that ownership and they want to be really good at their job and they're aligned around a purpose, like, some of these things just start happening for themselves, and you just got to like keep going and not let something derail you. I think that's another big thing as a manager, cause it's hard getting that momentum going. Like an object in motion stays in motion. Like once you get this thing going, it's rolling. Don't let something stop it. Like get that rock out of the way that you're going to run into, you know, like, or whatever it is, that's going to slow down your vehicle.
Yeah. What you just made me think about it. Who is it? The right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus, and the right people in the right seats.
Jim Collins.
Okay, that's right. Yep. Good to Great, was that where
yep.
it's from?
Yep.
Because even in that, I think he has that line where, like, once you do that, then the manager is out ahead of the bus, making sure all the rocks and all the crap is out of the way of the bus, right? And then you're just, it's just another metaphor for creating the environment, you know? Once the team is out there rocking and rolling, they're driving that bus, awesome. Your job is to make sure that nothing gets in the way of the bus. Awesome. I feel like this is a good spot to wrap it up. What do you think?
I think so too. I really like where we ended up. I think this refactor was a success.
Thank you for listening to the Agile Wire. We are consistently inspecting and adapting ourselves. We would appreciate feedback at feedback@theagilewire.com or on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play Store. See you next time.